And tonight's subject, Joash forsaken because he forsook Yahweh. We'll be pleased to hear from our brother Jim. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Brother Clem. Well, brothers and sisters and young people, on Tuesday evening we had cause to consider one of the great tragedies of the record of the kings. And we saw in Jehoshaphat a man who lost his identity because he virtually became Ahab. Tonight we have before us a man who tragically never acquired his own identity. And he also became a disaster. But before launching into our consideration this evening of Joash, we need to pause for a moment and to go back and have a look at some of the background which led up to his reign. You may recall that we very rapidly on Tuesday evening gave a summary of how it was that David's house ended up having only 1 6-month-old baby left. Well, it ended up that way because of the work of the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. And it's one of those great ironies of the kings, brethren and sisters and young people, that long after the blood of Ahab's house had soaked into oblivion in the northern kingdom by Yahweh's judgment through Jehu, the blood of Ahab ruled the ecclesia of Judah. What an enormous irony that is. And the compromise that Jehoshaphat made resulted not only in the loss of his own family and in the dismantling of his reforms, in the total rejection of his education of that nation, it resulted also in the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel ruling the ecclesia of God in Judah long after Ahab's house had disappeared in the north. And so we pick up the record of Athaliah and her evil deeds in 2 Chronicles chapter 22. It is here after the death of her husband Jehoram that we read of the accession of her son Ahaziah in the second verse of 2 Chronicles 22, which reads 40 and 2 years old. It should really read 20 and 2 years old, as you will find from the companion record of Kings. 20 and 2 years old was Ahaziah when he began to reign, and he reigned 1 year in Jerusalem. His mother's name also was Athaliah, the daughter of Omri. Now immediately you will notice something strange. For Athaliah was not the daughter of Omri. She was the daughter of Ahab and the granddaughter of Omri. Well, why does the record tell us that she was the daughter of Omri? There's got to be a reason for that. And so verse 3 proceeds, he also walked in the ways of the house of Ahab, for his mother was his counsellor to do wickedly. Now just quickly, keep your head in 2 Chronicles 22 and come across to Micah chapter 6 and verse 16. You may recall that one of the prophets that we met in our studies was that prophet Micaiah on Tuesday evening, who gave the prophecy about the demise of King Ahab. It just so happens that the prophet Micah bears exactly the same name and begins his prophecy with the words that Micaiah ended his prophecy. So then in Micah chapter 6 and verse 16 we read these words, "For the statutes of Omri are kept, and all the works of the house of Ahab, and ye walk in their counsels." Can you see what the prophet is getting at? Statutes or counsel is the means whereby we get action or a walk. Hence it says, the statutes of Omri, who was obviously an influential man who set down certain statutes which his son faithfully followed, were followed by Ahab to the letter. And there were works emanating from the house of Ahab. So the prophet goes on, "And ye walk in their counsels." So Omri was the statute maker, Ahab was the worker. Now you come back to 2 Chronicles 22 and read again with me the end of verse 2 and down to the end of verse 4. We read that his mother's name also was Athaliah, the daughter of Omri, the statute maker. "And he also walked in the ways
of the house of Ahab. The statutes of Omri are kept, and all the works of the house of Ahab. For his mother was his counselor to do wickedly. Wherefore he did evil in the sight of Yahweh like the house of Ahab, for they were his counselors after the death of his father to his destruction. That's why the record calls Athaliah the daughter of Omri, because she was the driving force behind her son Ahaziah, as she had indeed been the driving force behind her husband Jehoram, even as Omri was the statute maker for his son. You know, it's interesting, isn't it? The scripture does that for us, that we might see just how powerful counsel can be. Counsel, advice, direction. It is a powerful force, both in the home and in the ecclesia of God. We are the products, brethren and sisters and young people, of counsel. We do take advice, don't we? We are influenced by others. And so we have, therefore, to be very, very careful what sort of counsel we give. It was Athaliah who gave to her husband the counsel that he ought to murder his own brothers to ensure that he would have no rival for the throne. And when her son, Ahaziah, was killed by Jehu in Jezreel, look what she does in verse 10. This is the proof that she was the advisor behind Jehoram. But when Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead, she arose and destroyed all the seed royal of the house of Judah. They were her own grandchildren. Her own grandchildren. And she rose up and destroyed them that she might rule upon the throne of David. But Yahweh was there in the person of a woman, a very faithful woman, who was the sister of Ahaziah, and her name is Jehoshabeath. And that means the oath of Yahweh, or whose oath is Yahweh. And she, unlike the rest of her family, had made an oath to Yahweh to preserve Yahweh's oath to David. And so the record says she was the daughter of the king. She took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him from among the king's sons that were being slain, as that record should read, and put him and his nurse in a bedchamber. So Jehoshabeath, the daughter of King Jehoram, the wife of Jehoiada the priest, for she was the sister of Ahaziah, hid him from Athaliah so that she slew him not. And he was hid with them in the house of God 6 years. And Athaliah reigned over the land. I'll come back to that last phrase in a moment. But let's look at this scene. Can you imagine? Is it possible for you to imagine the scene in the palace of David on that day? When news came from Jezreel to Athaliah's ears that her son was dead, her first reaction was to order the slaughter of her own grandchildren. And her messengers went throughout the rooms of the palace slitting throats of children who might have been perhaps from teenage years right down to babies, because Joash was but 6 months old, perhaps even less than that. Brethren and sisters, it is difficult, isn't it? Particularly perhaps the sisters, to imagine the mind of a woman like that. But there was another woman working faithfully on Yahweh's behalf. And she rushed into the room. And as the soldiers went around from room to room, slitting throats, she rushed into the room where young Joash was being kept as a baby. And she took him and his nurse and shoved him underneath a bed and said, "Hide there, keep quiet." And she rushed out of the door and stood there. And as the soldiers came past, she said, "I've checked this room, there's no one there." And they went past. And that's what saved the house of David from total extinction. That was the result of Jehoshaphat's compromise. The heartbeat of a baby. And as they laid those bodies out, can you imagine it? Athaliah standing there, looking at the bodies, the dead bodies of her own grandchildren, and she didn't even know that she was one short. She didn't realize
that she'd missed one. There wouldn't be a grandmother here who doesn't know exactly how many grandchildren she's got. But Athaliah didn't know. Isn't that remarkable? What sort of mind was that? And that was giving counsel in the ecclesia of God to its leaders. And she became the queen upon David's throne for 6 years, the number of men. It was a reign of flesh. And the record says in verse 12 that she reigned over the land. She did not reign over the people of the land. And the next chapter sweeps on to speak about the way in which Jehoiada, that faithful teaching priest, was preparing the way for the demise of Athaliah and the accession to the throne of the last surviving member of David's house. He's mentioned there in that 11th verse of chapter 22 as being the husband of this woman, Jehoshabeth. Now get this picture in your mind. Jehoiada at this stage was 100 years old, and it appears as though he had married a woman who could not have been any more than 25 years old. She couldn't have been any more than 25 years old. So here we have a man, a faithful priest in Israel, in Judah I should say to be more specific, who married a daughter of the house of David. And he truly was, brethren and sisters, in every way a king priest, as you shall see tonight. And he went about the task of gathering to himself faithful men. They are mentioned in verse 1 of chapter 23. And then in the rest of that chapter, it speaks about the way in which he gathers around himself those in whom he could have confidence. And they waited for the right time. And it came 6 years later. And they put Athaliah to death. They proclaimed the boy Joash king of Judah and placed him upon the throne. And Jehoiada stood behind him and guided him for the rest of his life. I mean Jehoiada's life. It was tragedy for Joash that Jehoiada was so old, because he needed him. He needed him badly. And when Jehoiada was gone, so was Joash. We read at the end of chapter 23 in verse 21 that when Athaliah was dead, all the people of the land rejoiced. Notice that language? It said back at the end of the last chapter, she reigned over the land, not over the people. They didn't want her. And when she was dead, the people of the land rejoiced. And the city was quiet after they had slain Athaliah with the sword. And then we come to the record of chapter 24. And we meet King Joash as a 7-year-old boy. He was that age when he began to reign. And he reigned 40 years in Jerusalem. Verse 1 of the 24th chapter. His mother's name also was Zibiah of Beersheba. And Joash did that which was right in the sight of Yahweh all the days of Jehoiada the priest. Now I want you to notice something. It's repeated throughout this chapter. This man was totally dependent on Jehoiada, his uncle. Get that? On Jehoiada, his uncle. And the record says, he did that which was right all the days of Jehoiada, the priest. Have a look at the similar sort of phrases that are used in this chapter. In verse 3, for instance, it says, and Jehoiada took for him 2 wives. When it became time for him to marry, some years later, it was Jehoiada who arranged that. Have a look at verse 6. The king called for Jehoiada. Again, verse 12. And the king and Jehoiada. Have a look at verse 14. Fourth line, or third line. And the king and Jehoiada. The end of verse 14. All the days of Jehoiada. Verse 15. But Jehoiada waxed old. Verse 17. Now after the death of Jehoiada, he was dependent on him. And when he wasn't there, he failed. Miserably failed. But all we do need, don't we, brethren, younger brethren I speak to in particular, we do need the example and the instruction, the guidance, the wisdom of older brethren. We need a mentor and guide, but we also need young brethren to become individuals in our own right,
having taken that guidance and worked out our direction in life and having set that course, having been guided in it, never to forsake it. Doesn't matter who passes off the scene, having established ourselves, we ought to be able to keep that course. Joash never became an individual in his own right. He was always dependent on others, as we go to see. Come back with me to the 2 Kings chapter 12 and verses 2 onwards, which we find as the companion account of 2 Chronicles 24. It's just interesting to see the different language that is used here in 2 Kings chapter 12. And it emphasises again for us the importance of sound leadership and guidance which Joash got. He's called here in verse 2 of 2 Kings 12, Jehoash, it's actually the same man, did that which was right in the sight of Yahweh all his days, wherein Jehoiada the priest instructed him. Now it just so happens, brethren and sisters and young people, that word instructed in the Hebrew, Yara, which means to flow as water, hence to rain, and by a figure therefore to point out or to teach, is used in 2 Chronicles 15 verse 3 and translated a teaching priest. Now those of you who are with us on Sunday in the study on King Asa will remember that. The prophecy of Azariah was there was a time when there was no teaching priest in Israel, but they had one when he spoke, and it just so happened that Jehoiada had begun his service at 30 years of age in that very year. He was a teaching priest. The word is also used in Hosea 10 verse 12, and it's there translated as rain. Break up the fallow ground, sow your seed, and Yahweh will rain righteousness. He will send a teacher to bring forth the fruit. You see how important instruction and guidance is. And Jehoiada gave that instruction to young King Jehoash. But, verse 3, the high places were not totally removed. The people still sacrificed and burnt incense in the high places. But Joash was given guidance which worked in him a desire to rebuild the desecrations of the house of God. And he was quite zealous about it. So verse 4 says, and Jehoash said to the priests, all the money of the dedicated things that is brought into the house of Yahweh, even the money of everyone that passeth the account, or as Rotherham puts it, everyone who transgresseth, and the money that every man is set at, that is the silver of their person, or the half shekel of redemption, and all the money that cometh into any man's heart to bring into the house of Yahweh, that is willing offerings of money, let the priest take it to them, every man of his acquaintance, and let them repair the breaches, and the word breaches there means a gap or a leak, let them repair the gaps and the leaks of the house, wheresoever any breach shall be found. This was in his 23rd year. He was dedicated to patching up the desecrations of the temple that had resulted from the abuse of Athaliah and her sons. You know, brethren and sisters, that work can only be done by willing offerings. And Joash realized that. The transgression money and the redemption money were not adequate to do that job, and he knew that it needed a willing heart, and he had it. Now you come back with me to 2 Chronicles 24. So in the fourth verse of 2 Chronicles 24 we read, it came to pass after this that Joash was minded, the word literally means to be in his heart, it was in his heart to repair the house of Yahweh. And he gathered together the priests and the Levites and said to them, go out unto the cities of Judah. I want you to notice the language very carefully here. Go out to the cities of Judah and gather of all Israel money to repair the house of your God from year to year. He knew the need for willing offerings to be made for the gaps and the leaks of the ecclesia to be patched up. Brothers and sisters, isn't that so true? If the ecclesia and its operations is simply left to that which we have to do, how effectively does an ecclesia run? If your name's on a list and you've got to do it, how well does your ecclesia run? You know as well as I do that ecclesias only run well when we give a bit extra and we do things which we don't really have to do, but we do them because we know it will contribute to the growth of the ecclesia. Its gaps and its leaks will be closed up. Joash understood that principle, and so he sent them out to all the cities of Judah, and he knew he would find in the cities of Judah people from the 12 tribes. All Israel would be there, as a result, of course, of the massive migration that had been going on from the north to the south. The cities of Judah would be full of people from every tribe of that nation. I want you to bear that in mind, because there's a point that comes later that's based upon that verse. So he goes on, hastens the Levites to do the work, but they hastened it not, and he is even moved in his youthful enthusiasm to criticize his own uncle. Verse 6, and the king called for Jehoiada the chief, and said unto him, why hast thou not required of the Levites to bring in out of Judah and out of Jerusalem the collection according to the commandment of Moses, the servant of Yahweh, and of the congregation of Israel for the tabernacle of witness? For, and here's his reasons, for the sons of Athaliah, that wicked woman, and Rotherham translates it Athaliah the lawless, and that was her way of life, lawlessness, had broken up the house of God. And when we read that phrase, we ought to have in mind that it's not actually talking only about a literal house, although they had broken up the temple, but they'd also in the process broken up the spiritual house as well. They had broken up the house of God, and also all the dedicated things, the brethren and sisters, the vessels that were being used in that house, as you and I are vessels being used in this house, they had given them or bestowed them upon Balaam. They'd given the dedicated things to the service of Lord's many and God's many in this world. That was the ecclesial policy of this counselor, the daughter of Omri. And because of it, the works of the house of Ahab were done in Judah. What a terrible woman she was. And her influence had to be got rid of. And so Joash sets about that work. And we read on. But the king's commandment, they made a chest. They put it at the temple door in the court. They made a proclamation. And the money poured in for that work. And look at verse 10. It's there for a reason. And all the princes and all the people rejoiced, and brought him and cast into the chest until they had made an end. I just want you to bear in mind that it says all the princes and the people rejoiced. For the princes later had a change of heart and were to bring great tragedy upon the ecclesia of God. But while this work was going on, and while Jehoiada was guiding young King Joash, who was now 30 years of age, he was at that time in life when we ought really to be established in the truth. We ought to have done our homework, young brethren. We ought to know our pioneers. We ought to know where we're going in relation both to Bible study and to labouring in the ecclesia of God. We ought to be stabilised at age 30. This man wasn't. But while he was going along with the guidance of Jehoiada, all the princes and all the people went along with it, and they rejoiced. But I'll tell you something about those princes. They were closet liberals. They were hiding their true sympathies. They had never forgotten their former way of life. They could not get out of their minds the impressions that were etched upon them of the images of evil that Athaliah had spread throughout that nation. And while if you had examined them on that day, they would have said, we are absolutely behind what you are doing, Jehoiada and Joash. We are fully with you. When the time of testing came, their true selves came to the surface, and they were revealed for what they were. You just watch those princes. They're always there in the background, and they're going to come out of the closet very shortly, and you and I will see what happened
The 11th verse of this chapter speaks about the tremendous response they received. They kept putting the collection box out, it was filled up, and they brought it in. What a wonderful thing that would be for the treasure of the ecclesia. Every time they put it out, it got filled up. And the king, verse 12, and Jehoiada gave it to such as did the work of the service of the house of Yahweh, and he hired masons and carpenters to repair the house of Yahweh. You do need craftsmen to stop the gaps and the leaks of the ecclesia of God. Men who are skilled in their trade. Men who know exactly what has to be done. You put that in spiritual terms and the point I think is clear. And so hired masons and carpenters were brought to repair the house, and they gave it wrought in iron and brass to mend the house of Yahweh. So the workmen wrought, verse 13, and the work was perfected. There's some interesting words. That phrase there, the work was perfected, you'll see the margin vessels with that. The margin has the healing went up upon the work. In fact, the Hebrew words are Allah, we've met that one before, Eruchar. And they mean literally to ascend to wholeness. Put those two Hebrew words together, that's what it means, literally. To ascend to wholeness. I want you just to keep that in mind. I'm going to quote you a verse in the New Testament in a moment, and you'll see the relevance of it. So the work was perfected by them, it was brought to wholeness, and they set the house of God in, doesn't say its state, does it? It says his state. Keep that in mind as well. And they strengthened it. They made it strong, as Rotherham translates it, which is exactly what you and I ought to be doing with the house of God today. We ought to be ascending to wholeness to set the ecclesia of God in its true state. That phrase there, in his state, Rotherham translates it this way. They caused the house of God to stand forth according to its true proportions. And when they finished verse 14, they brought the rest of the money before the king and Jehoiada, and they made vessels, etc. And then the last sentence of that verse says, they offered burnt offerings in the house of Yahweh continually all the days of Jehoiada. What an enormous presence he was. There he was, 130 years of age. Wisdom, strength, oozed from this man. He was the moral conscience of the nation. And while he stood there, no one would lift a finger to suggest that they ought to be changing their direction or their policies. But no man lasts forever. And Jehoiada was to die. And the winds of doctrine were to change. I want you to join me. You know, in our studies thus far, I have never taken you out of the context of Kings except the verses that are directly related to our subject. I'm going to do that now. I don't know whether the Spirit was thinking about 2 Chronicles 24 when through Paul the words of Ephesians 4 were written, but you come and have a look at them with me. Whenever there were words written that apply to an Old Testament context without making a direct reference to it, these are those words. In the fourth chapter of Ephesians at verse 11 we read this. He, Christ, gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers. What for? Why did he give teaching priests, as it were? For the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying or the building up of the body of Christ. We've been reading about the building up of the temple, the house of God, blocking up its gaps and its leaks. Read on. Till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God unto a perfect man, a mature man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. And we read about the house of God standing forth in his true proportions. That we henceforth... Now look at these words of verse 14. Why do we have, or why do we want, a strong house of God, brethren and sisters? That, verse 14,
we henceforth be no more children. And young King Joash never grew up. He never became an individual adult in his own right. He was always dependent upon others, and he was tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men. Those who were hidden, and the cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait, the closet liberals, to deceive, but speaking the truth in love. We are doing this, growing up into him in all things which is the head, even Christ. And he goes on to speak about the body fitting together perfectly. There's no gaps, there's no leaks, every joint supplies something important to that body so that it ascends to fullness. And the work of God is perfected in his house. That's the context we're in, isn't it? Back here in 2 Chronicles 24. Now I've let you off light so far, brothers and sisters and young people. That's the easy section of our study together tonight. Now's the time for you to get those thinking caps out. And as we proceed, you're going to need them more and more. I'm going to scare you off by that, because there's nothing very difficult about it, providing you follow it carefully. You know what? The moment that Jehoiada was dead, the winds of doctrine began to blow around the ears of Joash. But look at the end of this great man Jehoiada in verses 15 and 16. Jehoiada waxed old and was full of days. He was satisfied with days. And wouldn't you be at 130? And they buried him in the city of David among the kings, which is more than what can be said for Joash, because at the end of verse 25 it says they buried him not in the sepulchres of the kings. You see, really what that record is telling us is that Jehoiada was the king. He was a king priest. And brothers and sisters, he was married to a daughter of the house of David. And they buried him among the kings in recognition of his contribution to that throne. He had guided Joash for 23 years. And they said, or it was said, because he had done good in Israel, both toward God and toward his house. Now, why on earth does it say in Israel? If I'd been writing it and you were writing it, I would have said, because he had done good in Judah. Wouldn't you? He never left the temple for 100 years of his life. He never went anywhere near Israel. What does it mean? Well, it means this, brothers and sisters, that Israel is taken as that larger term that embraces the whole nation as it used to be under David. It is the term which you might say could be represented by us with the word brotherhood. Because he had done good in the brotherhood, both toward God, and that's always got to be first, and toward his house. And you might put in the middle of those two that Jehoiada never forgot his responsibility to his family. He had his priorities right in life, brothers and sisters. God first, always first, then the ecclesia that he's given us in our homes, our own family, and then the wider ecclesia, the house of God. That was the order of his priority. I'll show you that's right in a moment. Because he produced a magnificent son, and after all, Joash, for the first 30 years of his life, was a product of Jehoiada's counsel. So you see, we are being told here that here was a man who never went outside Judah, probably rarely ever left the temple, and yet he had done good in the brotherhood at large. His influence was that wide. And they buried him, therefore, amongst the kings. But brethren and sisters, once he was buried, the moral conscience of the nation had been removed. The barrier to apostasy was gone. They all knew that while he breathed, it was pointless changing direction. They knew that they couldn't get to Joash while Jehoiada stood behind him. But they were also quite confident that once he was gone, Joash could be picked off. And they proceeded to do that. And so verse 17 says, now after the death of Jehoiada came the princes of Judah. These are the men of verse 10, remember? The closet liberals, who'd never really forgotten their former way of life and had never really committed themselves to the truth as they should. They were hiding their true sympathies. What was the point of bringing them out when you had Jehoiada around? But when he was gone, they did. And they became trendy liberals. And they expressed their views in the ecclesia. And they made obeisance to the king. Isn't it remarkable the way the flesh works, brethren and sisters and young people? If the record doesn't say that they came and demanded of the king, it says that they came and made obeisance to the king. They patted him on the back. They butted him up. They undermined him by subtlety. They ingratiated themselves, insinuating themselves into his confidence by their smooth words. The word obeisance means that, to depress or to prostrate, to bend down. It wasn't in homage. It was by deceit that they were doing it, that they might gain his confidence. And once they had that, they also had his ear and the counsellors who had heard the words of Athaliah so long ago began to counsel Joash to return to her evil ways. And the record says that the king hearkened unto them, and they left the house of Yahweh God of their fathers, and they served groves and idols. The word left there, Azab, means to loosen or to relinquish. You see, it doesn't just happen overnight, does it, apostasy? An ecclesia one day just doesn't say, well, look, we've had enough of all that stuff about pioneers and all this business about Bible study and separation from the world. Let's just give that away. It doesn't happen that way, does it? It happens slowly, by a change of counsel. And the counselors behind Joash were whispering in his ear, and he listened intelligently to them. I think it would be better if we did this. And he said, oh yes, that's right, we'll do that. He was dependent upon them. He wasn't a man in his own right. And he was guided by them to serve groves and idols. They forsook, they relinquished the house of Yahweh, God of their fathers, and they served Asherah. Now Asherah happens to mean happy. And that's why they were pursuing that religion, because it made them happy. And Asherah, of course, was a fertility god. It was a religion that was served with immoral worship, which appealed to the flesh. You know, the churches understand that. They have religions which appeal to the flesh, and surely, certainly, given time, we are going to see in the churches around us the evidence that they know the power of immorality to capture the hearts of men. Wouldn't happen in the brotherhood, of course, or would it? Well, they knew the power in those days, and they used it, and they decided to go for happiness, and they served the Asherah and the idols. And wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem for this their trespass. Serve the flesh and it gives you trouble. Yahweh tries to tell us that we're going the wrong way. And so he sent chastisement upon them. But they didn't listen. Because you see, they were determined to go their own way. They hadn't waited for 23 years, brethren and sisters and young people, to give up now. They had set their course and they were determined to go their own way. So verse 19 we read, yet he sent prophets to them, not just one but many, to bring them again unto Yahweh, and they testified against them. The word testified means to reiterate. They kept repeating the same message over and over again, but they would not give ear.
Is it that so true of mankind? They will not give ear. And the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, says verse 20. Now I pointed out last Sunday afternoon that twice in the Kings you have a phrase, the Spirit of God comes upon a prophet. Once we met that in the life of King Asa when it came upon Azariah. Here's the upshot of this phrase, in the Kings, the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah the son of Jehoiada the priest. The son of Jehoiada the priest? Yes. The product of sound counsel in the home? Here he was, maybe between 30 and 40 years of age, brought up in the same home as King Joash. He was Joash's cousin. It's all very significant, as you'll see as we proceed. And he stood up, having been imbued with the Spirit of God. In fact, the word there came upon is a word that means, in the Hebrew, to wrap around, as one would wrap a garment around himself. It took possession of him, as the Revised Standard Version translates it. So the Spirit of God took possession of this man, called Zechariah, which means, Yah hath remembered. And I want you to remember that, because that again will be significant. I want to stack into your mind a few little points, and then we shall go and have a look at a couple of references which are highly significant to understanding this context. So here we have the Spirit of God filling this man Zechariah, clothing him like a garment, and he stands up above the people. The phrase there, which stood above the people, Rotherham translates it, and he took his stand above the people. It appears as though he got a position whereby he could be seen by them all. And he stood over against them and began to speak words. What sort of words were they? We'll have a look at them at the end of verse 20. Thus saith God, why transgress ye the commandments of Yahweh so that ye cannot prosper? You'll notice I've added the word so, and so should you, because that's actually there. Why transgress ye the commandments of Yahweh so that you cannot prosper? Because you have forsaken Yahweh, he also hath forsaken you. Where have you heard that before? Was it not in the words of Azariah the prophet in 2 Chronicles chapter 15? Remember that, brothers and sisters? They're the same words. 2 Chronicles 15 verses 1 and 2. The message was, if ye seek Yahweh, ye shall find him. If ye forsake him, he will forsake you. They're the only two occurrences in the Kings where the Spirit of God is said to embrace the man to give that message. Got to be a point in that, doesn't there? And there is a point in it. And so we read, for having given that message, verse 21, they conspired against him and stoned him with stones at the commandment of the king in the court of the house of Yahweh. He was the only one left in that house. All the rest had forsaken it. Verse 18. They had left the house of their God. The only one left in it was the son of Jehoiada. And he stood above the people. He was separate from them, but he was trying to bring them to him back into the house of God. And they conspired against him. The word conspired means to tie, to make a league together. You know what, brothers and sisters, we're being taught something about human nature there. You would think, wouldn't you, that after the rebuke of many prophets, verse 19, the obvious filling of a man with the Spirit of God in verse 20, and the reiteration of a message that if you forsake Yahweh, he must forsake you, you would think, wouldn't you, that they would have come to their senses and said to themselves, well, look, yes, brethren, we have been wrong. We'd better forsake these immoral things, these Asherahs. We don't really find happiness there because we've had problems as a result of that, which always happens. We'll give that away and come back to the worship, the pure worship of Yahweh. You'd think that's what would happen, wouldn't you? But it doesn't happen, does it? Very rarely does it happen. Human nature doesn't like to bow down and say, yes, I was wrong. It refuses to be rebuked. It doesn't like to be told that it's on the wrong path. You know what it does?
It turns the accusing finger at others, usually those who tell them that they are doing wrong. And so here we have the record. They conspired against him. And they stoned him with stones at the commandment of the king. It was his own cousin. But they stoned him nevertheless in the court of the house of Yahweh. As boys, they grew up together in the same house. Didn't matter. That's why the record of verse 22 says, thus Joash the king remembered not. You know what Zechariah means, remember? Yah hath remembered. Joash the king remembered not the kindness, there's the word for divine mercy, chesed, which Jehoiada his father had done to him, but slew his son. It's an unbelievable record of ungratefulness. For he had been brought up by Jehoiada as a companion to Jehoiada's own son. And he ends up doing a complete circle, rejecting Jehoiada's guidance and killing his own son. He remembered not his kindness. But brethren and sisters, Yahweh remembered, and Yahweh knew. And that's exactly what Jehoiada's name means. Yahweh knoweth. He knew. And he was going to revenge the killing of Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada. And so the record of verse 22 says, and when he died, he said, Yahweh, look upon it and require it. Now the word look upon there is the Hebrew word re'ah. Remember that? We've met that before. It means to see. And Rotherham and the Revised Version actually translate it that way. To see. Yahweh see and require. The word require is garash. And it means to tread or to frequent or to follow in pursuit. And Yahweh was going to pursue it. So Rotherham's translation is probably the best when it says, Yahweh see and revenge. Now I want you to keep those words firmly in mind, because in a moment we're going to go to two passages in the New Testament and we'll show you where those words are picked up by the Lord Jesus Christ, of whom Zechariah was a type. You look at him. He was imbued, he was clothed with the Spirit of God, and God did not give the Spirit by measure to his son. He was the high priest elect, as was the Lord Jesus Christ. He was the son of David, as well as a priest. Remember that? He was a priest from the tribe of Judah. For his mother was Jehoshabeth, and she was a daughter of David. A priest from the tribe of Judah. And moreover, he was conspired against by the rulers of his own people. And they slew him. And he committed vengeance into the hand of Yahweh. Now you come with me to Matthew 23. In the 23rd chapter of Matthew, we have, of course, the eight woes of the Lord Jesus Christ against the hypocritical leaders of his nation, the princes, the closet liberals, of whom he could say, all that they bid you to do, you observe, but don't you do after their works, because when they close the door, they practice evils in the privacy of their homes. Closet liberals. Don't you do like them. But they will manifest themselves for what they are, because he says in verse 31 to them, wherefore ye be witnesses unto yourselves that ye are the children of them which killed the prophets. You are like the princes of Judah in the days of King Joash. Fill ye up then the measure of your fathers, ye serpents, you generation of vipers. How can you escape the damnation of hell? Wherefore? And look at these words. They're built upon 2 Chronicles 24. Wherefore, behold, I send unto you prophets. Remember, verse 19. He sent them prophets and wise men. Remember Jehoiada? And scribes. And some of them ye shall kill and crucify, and some of them ye shall scourge in your synagogues and persecute them from city to city, that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel unto the blood of Zacharias. Where's the Zechariah that we've been talking about? But he's here called the son of Barachias. Now just pause for a moment. The Lord Jesus Christ is talking about a whole litany of prophets from Abel to Zechariah. In the record here we have reference to Berechiah, who was the father of the prophet Zechariah at the end of the Old Testament. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about this particular matter because it's a problem. The margin itself suggests that this is based upon 2 Chronicles 24, and that perhaps we should read Zechariah the son of Jehoiada. There are those who suggest that Berechias or Berechiah was the second name of Jehoiada. I think that's a bit far-fetched. There are those who think this was a prophecy of a man called Zechariah who was murdered in AD 68, sometime later on. That again is not likely, it's a bit far-fetched. The other suggestion, of course, is that the name Berechias is an interpolation. Now, I'm always cautious about saying that any word in the Bible is an interpolation. It sounds too convenient. But we shall cast the matter not to the winds of doctrine, but to the context. And have a look at what that's got to say, and you'll be convinced with me that Berechias ought not to be there. Or if any name should be there, it should be Jehoiada. You read on with me. The son of Berechias or Jehoiada, whom ye slew between the temple and the altar, and there's only one record in scripture of that ever happening to anyone called Zechariah, and that's 2 Chronicles 24, verily I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that killest the prophets and stonest them which are sent unto thee by God's Spirit. How often would I have gathered together thy children, even as a hen gathereth her chickens under her wings? And of Zechariah the son of Jehoiada it is said that he took his stand above the people who were outside the house, and he was in the house, and he called out to them to come to him. Seek Yahweh, and you will find him. Forsake him, and he will forsake you. Behold, because you would not, your house is left unto you desolate. And they stoned the only man left in it, and it was left desolate. For I say unto you, you shall not see me until I come back to that house. Have a look at Luke chapter 11. This is the companion record. And here you don't have the problem of the names of name of Berechiah occurring. And there's no doubt at all in my mind that we shall find in the time of the judgment seat of Christ when many problems will be resolved. But in fact, it should read in Matthew 23, Jehoiada and not Berechiah. You remember this context of Luke chapter 11. Woe unto you, for ye build the sepulchre of the prophets and your fathers killed them. Truly ye bear witness that ye allow the deeds of your fathers. I'm in verse 48 of Luke chapter 11. Truly ye bear witness that ye allow the deeds of your fathers, for they indeed killed them, and ye build their sepulchres. Doubtless one of them, of course, was the sepulchre of Jehoiada, and maybe even of Zechariah. Therefore, verse 49, also said the wisdom of God, I will send them prophets and apostles, and some of them they shall slay and persecute, that the blood of all the prophets which were shed from the foundation of the world may be required of this generation. Now you see why someone might want to interpolate Berechiah, because Zechariah the son of Jehoiada came before the prophets Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, and many others. Therefore you couldn't really say, could you, that it was all the prophets? But why did the Lord Jesus Christ, brothers and sisters, pick upon Zechariah the son of Jehoiada? I'll tell you why. Because there is no better type amongst the prophets of himself than Zechariah the son of Jehoiada. You look what he goes on to say. Verse 50. That the blood of all the prophets which were shed from the foundation of the world may be required of this generation. And when Zechariah died, he said, Yahweh, see and require it. Read on. Verse 51. From the blood of Abel, under the blood of Zacharias, which perished between the altar and the temple, verily I say unto you, it shall be required of this generation. And the word in the Greek, exetio, means to seek out, to search out. It is the exact Hebrew equivalent of darash, to pursue, to seek out, and hence to avenge. Brothers and sisters, if that's not a reference to Zechariah as a type of Christ, embracing all the prophets of God, from Abel to the time of the Lord himself, I don't know what is. But you come back with me to 2 Chronicles 24. It hasn't been too hard, has it? To that point? I hope. Well, if Zechariah was a type of Christ and they crucified him, what was the next major event? Was it not the vengeance that Yahweh sent in AD 66 in the Roman armies, who finally got rid of the rulers of Jerusalem who had slain him? Upon us and upon our children be his blood. And it was, Brother Robert suggests, the crosses around that city probably contained the bodies of men who had been responsible for the death of their own Messiah. Quite likely that was a divine judgment upon them. And that's exactly what happens in verse 23 of 2 Chronicles 24. And it came to pass at the end of the year that the host of Syria came up against him, and they came to Judah and Jerusalem, and they destroyed all the princes of the people. Notice the language, from among the people. Didn't bother about the people. They wanted the princes. Why? Because they were divine judges. Yahweh was seeking out the men who had been responsible for the apostasy and for the murder of Zechariah. He sought them out carefully. You know what, brothers and sisters? Do you know the name of the king of Syria who came up against them? His name was Hazael, and it means, you wait for it, God has seen. Have a look again at the end of verse 22. As he died, he said, Yahweh see and require it. And along comes a man called God has seen. And he brought judgment upon the murderers of Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada, even as he brought judgment upon the murderers of his own son. And the record goes on to say in verse 24, for the army of the Syrians came with a small company of men, and Yahweh delivered a very great host into their hand. When Yahweh is against you, you do not stand a chance. Because they had forsaken Yahweh, God of their fathers, so they executed judgment against them. A mini army from Syria wiped them away, because God was against them. And when they were departed, verse 25, from him, for they left him in great diseases, and the word really means to be sorely wounded, his own servants conspired against him for the blood of the son of Jehoiada the priest, as it should read, and he had one son, and slew him on his bed, and he died. What an incredible thing that is. Slew him on his bed. Where had Joash begun his life, brethren and sisters? He had begun it under a bed, shoved under a bed by Jehoshabeth, that faithful woman and a nurse. And there he had begun, as it were, a life that was to lead to his rulership of God's ecclesia. He had come the full circle. You know who put him to death? And this was poetic justice. We said yesterday in the sisters' class that when Yahweh moves to judge men, he does it exquisitely. He judges them according to their sins. He's done it so often. And we're going to see it here tonight. And this judgment is so complete that our minds boggle that it could be possible. But it is possible. It happened. And it will happen to us if, like Joash, we tamper with the things of God and forsake his house. You know what? He was killed by his own servants. It says that he was sorely wounded, and the people upon whom he was most dependent
slew. And he was, brethren and sisters, the ungrateful dependent, was he not? He remembered not the kindness which Jehoiada had showed to him when he knew absolutely nothing as a six-month-old baby. He was dependent on Jehoiada. And at the end of his life, he slew Jehoiada's son. And when he himself was sorely wounded and was dependent upon the help of his servants, it was they who slew him on a bed. You read on. And he died, and they buried him in the city of David, but they didn't bury him in the sepulchres of the kings. And these are they that conspired against him. Zabed, the son of Shimeath, an Ammonitess. Did you read that? His name was Zabed, the son of Shimeath, an Ammonitess. Now normally in the Bible, when we read about the origins of someone, we are told his father's name. Not here in this record. This fellow was the son of an Ammonitess, a woman. That's most unusual. There's a purpose for it, you'll see. And the other fellow was Jehozabad, the son of Shimrith, a Moabitess. So you see, it was men who killed him, but the record is at pains to tell us that they were the sons of two women who ought not to have been anywhere near the house of God. And if it had not been, brothers and sisters, for two women who should have been and were very propitiously in the palace and then in the house of God, Joash would not be alive. You know, the record of Deuteronomy 23 and verses 3 to 6 says that a Moabite and an Ammonite shall not come into the house of Yahweh for the tenth generation. Then adds, even forever. Why remain as Moabites and Ammonites? They're out. Why were they out? Because they met Israel not with bread and water. Or to use the words of verse 22, they remembered not the kindness of Yahweh to them, but slew, as it were, his son. What did they do? Well, they sent amongst them those immoral women that ended up with the slaughter of thousands of Israelites. Starting to see it, I'm going to build it one upon the other. This is exquisite divine poetic justice. Here he was, a man, the ungrateful dependent, slain by his own servants, the sons of two women who ought not to have been anywhere near the ecclesia of God, but they were. Where did they come from? Moab and Ammon. Well, you know as well as I do where they came from. They were the daughters, they were the sons, rather, of the daughter or daughters of Lot. You know what, brothers and sisters? This is extremely interesting. Moab and Ammon were born by incest. Lot, because he felt inclined to do so, forsook his uncle Abraham. Remember, Joash was the nephew of Jehoiada. Lot forsook his uncle Abraham, and he took his house to Sodom and Gomorrah, and his house was left unto him desolate, all except for two women who, like Jehoshabath and the nurse, were related to him. They were, of course, Lot's own daughters. And where did Lot end up? He ended up hiding in a bedchamber. Remember? They hid Joash in a bedchamber. Hiding in a bedchamber. And when he didn't know what he was doing, when he was totally dependent on his two daughters, they conceived by him and brought forth Moab and Ammon. Now I hope that you've got that. When you add that all up, brothers and sisters, that is an unbelievable record
of how God rewards those who turn against him. Isn't that absolutely pure, exquisite, divine poetic justice? Well, what are the lessons that we've learned from King Joash? We've learned this, that youthful enthusiasm for the ecclesia under the guidance of those who are wise in the truth is a wonderful thing. But we've also learned that having a fixed heart is absolutely crucial. Individual development. We need to become individuals in our own right as a result of our own hard work in the Bible. It's as simple as that. We've got to remember this, that today's young are the leaders of tomorrow. And if the Lord should tarry, and he won't, thankfully for you and me, but if he did, then we would have to have young brethren to take the position of those who, like Jehoiada, stood and guided the ecclesia with their enormous presence built over years because of their attention to the things of God. There is a responsibility, therefore, upon us, each one, those of us who are parents, those of us who are the leaders of our young, to educate and to develop them that they might take their place in the ecclesia of God, to guide it firmly in the way, that they might never forsake the house of God, that it might never have gaps and leaks, that it might ascend to wholeness. Remember the words of verse 13? So the workman wrought, we need to do that, and the work was perfected, it ascended to wholeness, and they set the house of God in its true proportions. May it be said of you and me, brothers and sisters and young people, may it be said that though we might be buried amongst the kings, as it were, those kings who are awaiting to rule in the kingdom age, that the day will come when we shall rise up like Jehoiada and share with him the blessing of being a king priest, which he once was, throughout the age of ages, to guide the house of God. And may it be said of you and me what was said of him, that he had done good in Israel, both to rule God and to rule his house.